T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
What is this? What are we doing? What in God's name are we doing? Look, our lives. What kind of lives are these? We're like children. We're not men.
No, we're not. We're not men.
It's the Nightcap.
Are we going to be sitting here when we're 60 like two idiots?
We should be having dinner with our sons when we're 60.
We're pathetic, you know that?
Yeah, like I don't know that I'm pathetic.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes!
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something.
There isn't.
You know, it's like a wash cycle going on in my head right now with different sports takes and sports opinions. There's so much happening right now up there. The Super League, the NBA, Don Granato, the draft, fantasy with the draft, rookie draft stuff.
There's too much.
And I don't know which one is going to come out first. The wheel's going to stop, and then it's going to land on something. Brendan Keeney, Joe DiBiase here on the Nightcap. 803-0550 is the phone number. Plus, I had some coffee. When I say some coffee, I don't know, what would qualify as a lot of coffee?
For me, any amount of coffee, because I just don't drink coffee. So any amount of caffeine would get me going.
Is that what do you find then when you have even a little bit of caffeine? It's just chaos?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just amped.
You're not a caffeine guy.
Not a caffeine guy.
I try not to be. But some.
Yeah.
I got off the energy
drinks. The last time I had like a caffeinated, like a drink to have caffeine. I don't know if I've ever had a drink because I was like, oh, I need a boost of energy. I don't think I've ever done that.
Maybe you'll have to do it now that you're doing MMA training.
Soon.
You're going to need some caffeine for that. Wake up early in the morning. So. Sal was on the station the other day. He's doing boxing lessons. Now you're doing this. And everyone, one of my other buddies is doing something similar. It's like jiu-jitsu maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to do it.
That's what I want to do.
It's so time consuming. I'm already doing a workout regimen thing. I would have to basically give up in the middle of that. Maybe in the summer.
What are we all preparing for? You know,
is something on the way? Is there going to be a Royal Rumble here at work or something? We've had that debate, by the way, amazingly.
Who would win a Royal Rumble here?
We've had a WGR Royal Rumble debate, and I'm pretty sure Bulldog won the voting.
That's who I would vote for.
I think I was on Jeremy for that. Jeremy has got, I think, sneaky athleticism. But all right, Joe DiBiase, Brendan Keeney here on the Nightcap for the next hour. Thanks for tuning in. We've got Sabre games on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, so we'll be here on Monday and Wednesday, today being Monday. I want to talk about the top of the NFL draft. We will do that. But just at the beginning here, just to get it out of the way, how plugged in are you to the Super League storyline overseas?
I've tried to talk. I'm not extremely knowledgeable about European soccer, but I have talked with a number of friends and people who I know are in the know about this kind of stuff, and I feel like I could have a conversation about it.
I am very consumed by this today. I am very interested in it. It's wild to me that this has happened. Because it always seemed like a bargaining tool. And if you don't know what's going on, the English Premier League, La Liga, the Bundesliga, the French League, Serie A in Italy, every league's kind of got two or three teams at the top that are just, they're mega teams. They're mega clubs. Like, imagine the Golden State Warriors as a super team a couple years ago in the NBA, but there's always one of those. Like, every year, there's a team that you know they're going to finish first or second. And those teams collectively across the continent have gotten together, and they have decided that they are not going to play in the UEFA Champions League, which typically is the league where all of those teams play against each other. The top four teams in the Premier League get in, the top two teams in the Spanish League get in, the top two teams in the Italian League get in, and so on. And then they all play it out. But the thing that's become, that is increasing with UEFA, that came out actually yesterday before the Super League news, was they continue to expand and expand and expand. So, okay, we're allowing teams from Greece. Now we're allowing two teams from the Netherlands. Belgium's going to get their champion in here. Now we're going to add an extra team from Germany. They're going to be at five now instead of four. Like, you are diluting the product in a money grab to get more teams in, to get more games on television. And the big clubs at the top are looking at that and saying, well, we're good every year, and these other teams never have any chance of winning this thing. So why do we have to split all this revenue with them? It reminds me there's not a lot of comparables to pro sports in North America, but it kind of reminds me of what the NCAA has done with March Madness, to where you've got the first four now, and you're up to 64 teams. Maybe that was increased a couple of years ago.
Well, you're up to 68. To get to 64.
68 to get to 64. Maybe there's even talk they're going to expand that first four in the next couple of years. You've got college football that is talking about an 8-team playoff maybe at some point down the road. I know actually college hockey's doing that. And you're really, to me, what you're doing is you're taking revenue out of the pockets of the big clubs and you're giving them and you're spreading them around to the littler ones that are now a part of this tournament. And these European mega clubs are saying, no, we're done. We're going to go form our own league. There's going to be 20 teams. That's it. And guess what? 15 of us are never leaving. So we're not going to have it where, you know, these billion-dollar entities like Manchester United and Manchester City have an off year, maybe because of injuries, and, oh, they finish fifth in the Premier League. So guess what? You're not getting an entry ticket to the Champions League. You're not getting that extra revenue stream that you get normally because you had an off year. And what I think these clubs are trying to do is they're trying to guarantee themselves that revenue by creating their own Super League. But the blowback has been amazing. Like, UEFA calling them snakes and saying they're going to ban players from the World Cup and they're not going to be allowed in the FIFA video game. And then you've got the other side being like, well, let's create our own video game. We'll just create our own World Cup.
And if we're going to do this, go all the way.
Yeah, like anything you want to take us out of, we will just do it ourselves because we are the ones with the leverage here. We're the teams that make the money, because good luck having a Champions League without the 12 most interesting teams in the league that are in the continent that are always winning. So I just think it's so interesting to look at a complete revolution in a sport that is happening overseas. And I think it is fueled by a lot of the American owners of those teams, because that is increasing. Chelsea,
Fenway Sports Group.
Yep, Fenway Sports Group owns Liverpool. John Henry,
yep,
leading the way there. They own the Red Sox. Actually, LeBron James is a part owner, too.
The Rams owner, Stan.
The Rams owner, Shad Khan. No, Stan Kroenke. Shad Khan is the Jaguars
owner.
He owns a smaller club, I think. But anyways, you're looking at all of that, and I think this is a bit of American influence, because one thing I was reading about this story earlier today is soccer is such a growing sport among young Americans and in Asia that these teams are making more money marketing themselves to the United States and to Asia than they are to their own fan bases at home. And that's where I think this is an interesting dynamic that we'll never see here. Because where do the Sabres make their money? Buffalo. Where do the Bills make their money?
Right.
Buffalo. Where do the Memphis Grizzlies make their money? Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot. There's some teams, you know, like the Warriors in the past go across the country, the Patriots. You don't have this effect to where these billion-dollar owners of these soccer teams right now had to make a decision. Do they go with the money And do they go with fans of their teams that don't even live on the same continent? Or do they side with the fans that go to the games, that want them to be in the Champions League, that want them to be in the Premier League? Because right now, they're picking the U.S. and Asia. And that, to me, is just that's a wild concept
right.
that we'll never see here.
You know, you said that there's not a lot of comparables because sports here are obviously,
they're different.
Americanized. You're guaranteed a spot every single year. You're going to make your money. There's going to be that, there's no relegation process. There's none of that. And everyone's somewhat on an equal footing in American sports, right? Even the teams that are better can't spend a certain amount of money it's not like you can just spend all this money in football. Now, you can a little bit in baseball, and that's probably where it changes a little bit. But the best comparable I saw for what's going on with the Super League is if the top college football teams decided to make their own league because they knew they were, even if they were the eighth best team in the SEC, they're probably a top 20 team in the country.
Yep.
And so if like the top eight SEC teams were like, hey, Notre Dame, hey, Texas, hey, Clemson, let's go form our own league and we'll be in a playoff every single year. That's like the comparable. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. And hasn't that been talked about in college sports? At least been some discussion, like these teams will get together and they'll go away from the NCAA, and they'll kind of make their own rules. Because I think
I have heard about, I feel like that's less about,
is it more about eligibility? And
yeah, I think it's more about protesting the NCAA.
Okay. Because there's some, the thing I wonder, and like we can make this comparison for college sports. If that happened, if Ohio State and Alabama and Clemson and USC and Penn State, like they all got together, the top, I don't know, 30 schools in the country, and they decided we're going to make our own league away from the NCAA. What would happen to the product? Because I'm a very casual college football fan, and
I am not. I live and breathe college football.
And I'm guessing, I don't know this, would you hate it? Would you hate that? Notre Dame, too. You're wearing the Notre Dame hat. They're a part of that, of course. Like Notre Dame now is playing the top 30 schools in the country. That's what their entire schedule is made up every year. And they will no longer be playing, you know, Kent State.
Oh,
because
that's kind of
what happens in the Champions League. And I think those hardcore fans, they want that journey. They want that qualifying against the third best team in the Czech Republic, playing in, you know, a 2,000 seat stadium, even though their players are, you know, they're $1 million players, like tens of millions of dollars spent on these guys. Messi's playing in some town in Denmark in the Champions League to qualify to get to the next round. Like, I think the hardcore fans love that journey.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to appeal to a bigger audience, you're trying to grow the sport, you're trying to get those casual fans, how do you do that? Well, soccer does it with Real Madrid versus Manchester City, or Real Madrid versus Juventus with Ronaldo. And I think college football similarly does that with, if Alabama's playing Michigan this week instead of South Carolina State or Citadel,
but don't
you think I'm much more likely to watch.
Don't you think it loses its luster by being oversaturated? The big games are oversaturated. And another thing is, if 30 of the best teams in the country, here's two things. If the 30 best teams in the country are all in the same league and play each other in some sort of scheduling format, you know, the idea of an upset becomes
No, you're right. Like, it takes that element away.
Yes, you take that possibility of a major upset kind of out of the equation. And these are 18 to 22 year old kids who are prone to having bad games, and you can watch an Appalachian State beat a Michigan. Like, that has happened. It's not going to happen all the time. That's why it's a huge upset. But if you completely take away that possibility, then that's kind of, then you rob yourself of great sports moments, right? And I'm not saying you can't have a great sports moment with two amazing teams, because you don't necessarily need it to be an upset for it to be a great sports moment. But, you know, you're talking about Alabama-Michigan. That's a game that you don't get to see all the time. You don't get to see Notre Dame play Ohio State every year. You don't get to see Texas play against X every year. Like, I think that's one of the cool parts about college football mm-hmm. is that you have these matchups just kind of once in a blue moon. You know, like, there's matchups every year that don't really ever happen. Mm-hmm. And I like that about college football. So I would be against it. I would be against it in college football, even though I know for a fact the team that I pull for would be a part of that big group, that yeah. mega group, without question.
Last thing I'll say on this, because I don't want to spend all night on the Super League, even though I think it's super interesting what's going to happen. I wonder how far UEFA's bluff will go. Their bluff, well, I think is a bluff, is that they will kick Liverpool and the Manchester teams and Chelsea. They're out of the Premier League if you do this.
Well, not the Premier League, the Champions League,
right? No, the Premier League, too. They're saying you're out of the Premier League if you do this. And they're saying the same.
UEFA can do that?
UEFA oversees all those leagues. They are the governing body of European soccer. And that's why this is a power struggle right now. Because these big mega clubs are trying to be their own governing bodies because they don't like the rules that have been set up for them. And what I wonder, though, is how far will UEFA take it? Because right now what they're saying is you're out of your home domestic leagues. You're out of the Champions League. The players that play, even though, like, I watched Liverpool versus Leeds United today, and Jurgen Klopp, the manager, like, tough job, because I think probably he hates this decision, but it was made at the ownership level. So what can you really say? The players, I'm guessing, don't love this.
There's already examples of a couple of them saying that it's terrible and hate it.
But even if you were staunchly against it, like you're taking a risk going against the decision that you're the guy who just signs your paychecks just made. So the players and the managers, though, are the kind of the ones taking the brunt of this, because one of the other threats from UEFA is, well, now you're not playing in the World Cup if you play in the Super League. And that's where I think they're bluffing, because I don't believe that they won't allow them to play in the World Cup if this Super League happens. There's no way. The networks won't let FIFA and UEFA do it. They won't let them carry that through. Because if you're ESPN or you're Sky Sports in England or you're whoever the biggest carrier of the World Cup is in Asia, like all these mega million-dollar, billion-dollar TV deals around the world, you're going to go into those meetings with your partners and say, listen, there's no Ronaldo. You can't market him for the World Cup. There's no Messi. You can't market him for the World Cup. Christian Pulisic, who plays for Chelsea, the big U.S. star that no doubt the next time the U.S. is in the World Cup, he is going to be a marketing machine to get people to watch their games. You got to tell ESPN, no Christian Pulisic. I can't believe that their networks will go along with that. And that's where I think they're bluffing. I don't think that's where they go through with it. Especially when the players are really not at fault here. They're just kind of going with the whims of their teams. So, I don't know. I would love to see what happens. But again, I do not believe that they will ban players from playing in the FIFA World Cup. It's your biggest tournament of the year. And if you're upset with something that the European clubs did, I mean, you're taking away 90% of your great players. Like, that's where the great players play, that the big mega clubs. And I won't believe it. Pulisic too. I would be so mad if he wasn't in the next World Cup. Like, the U.S. is actually, now it's being talked about that they have like their best potential World Cup roster in 25 years. They just cracked the top 20 of the FIFA rankings for nations for like the first time since the 90s, or maybe the late 2000s. First time in over a decade that they've done that. And you're going to go take away their best player. Like, just because of what the owner of Chelsea did. That I won't believe. So, we'll see how it goes. You don't like my relegation plan for the NHL, by the way.
It's not that I don't like it. I just think it's so realistic. Impossible to even get there.
I just think the NHL would see the dollars at the end of the day and think... So, if you don't know, I was tweeting about it, and I wrote an article about it at our website. It kind of relates to Seattle expanding into the league. Can we get to 40 teams, find 8 cities? The cities I picked out don't have to work, don't have to be the ones, but Quebec, has wanted a team. Saskatoon is not a big market. In fact, it's probably would be the tiniest market by a lot in North American sports, but they built an NHL arena with the hopes of getting one. Hartford, Portland once maybe wanted an NHL team way back when.
Houston
recently. Eugene Melnick of the Senators was talking about going there. Cleveland used to have an NHL team.
Milwaukee.
Whatever. Yeah, sure. You find eight cities that could sustain an NHL club. And you have them all pay their big... What did Seattle pay to get in the
400 NHL? 400-some million dollars?
Yeah. So we're talking billions of dollars in expansion fees. And this is how you get relegation in North American sports for me. 40 is way too many to have one big league. And I wonder if we'll get to this point naturally. It might be 50 years down the road. But look at the rate of expansion. It started to slow down, but we were at, the NHL was at 20, and then they were at 24, and then 28, and then 30, and now they're at 32. Who's not to say they'll get to 33 or 34 in the next decade? Like, at some point, the league becomes too big to where you can't have it all as one entity. And that's where I like my relegation idea. Two NHLs, an A and a B, you can call them whatever you want. NHL A and NHL B is probably pretty lame. I would never do that. And then the top 20 is the bottom, or I'm sorry, the top league, like the NHL A, would be 20 teams. The bottom three each year go down to the NHL B, and then the top three teams from the NHL B go up to the NHL A. And that's basically my relegation idea. There's a lot of more, details would have to be worked out to get that.
I think if the Sabres were not in the middle of a 10-year playoff drought, this would be an easier sell on me.
Well, let me ask you though. I get that they would have been in the bottom league, the bottom NHL, this entire time. They also would have been playing a lot more interesting games, I think.
Yeah,
like if they were in the bottom tier of the NHL, in my relegation make-believe land here, and they were playing to get into the top league year after year.
How would you run something like a draft?
Now we're already two things that I haven't thought about yet, because that would be tough. You would have to go with the bottom tier teams first.
How would you do free agency? Does every club have the same amount of money? Is there a salary cap?
Cap is the same. Facilities are the same. That's another thing here. That's why you could never do it with the AHL for this.
So how could you convince an owner that now owns a team that's in playing in NHLB and say, listen, you can't sign any good players because naturally they won't want to play for you. And you still have all of the normal expenses, how expensive it is to upkeep NHL arena compared to a soccer stadium, mm-hmm. with the sheer amount of power that you have to generate. All these expenses are the same. You might be paying a little bit less in salary, but all these expenses are the same, and now you have to try to compete to even get up to the point of competing. And then you're most likely just going to be a tweener for a long time before you have like a crazy breakthrough like Leicester had in the Prem, or now they're a power. But it's not like that happens a lot. Like, I don't know. I think it's a tough sell to an American sports owner.
What I think is the one thing that might get them and push them over the edge is the $100 million they would make each from the expansion fees. But is that worth it?
I don't, like...
It's about the... I mean, it's
what
some percentage of
their teams. What if you're
playing
in NHLB for a decade and a half?
Well, then you got to do better drafting and developing to get up there. You're still going to sell tickets because fans are still going to be interested.
I just love how you just say, oh, you just got to do better.
Well, no. Like, I mean, it's still... And I don't want to always compare it to soccer, but there's nothing else to compare it to. Like, those teams, they bring up their young players, and then once they're like in their primes, if they're all really good, then that's how you get to the top league. And this happened with like Wolverhampton a couple years ago. Like, they had a crop of good young players get to the big club, and they all played really well, and they got promoted to the Premier League. And they're not winning the title, because in that sport there's way less parity than anywhere else in sports. But they were top five, top 10 for a few years in a row there, and like they weren't even near the relegation battle.
Don't you think that the parody is what American sports fans love? Like, if you create a relegation system and two leagues, you are inherently creating a sports system that cannot have parody. That's what you're doing. And this is a league, Joe, that has prided itself on the amount of parody it has. It's like it's one of their marketing taglines.
I think you can still have parody. Why am I not having parody anymore?
You just described it. Like, you're going to have teams that benefit from being good. And so they're going to be good, and they're going to stay good because they're going to be making money, and they're going to want, and they're going to get players
but
that
don't
are attracted to them.
It's
going
to be harder for them to stay good because of the like suddenly when you're picking 10 spots lower in the draft than you were ever.
Let's talk about the Prem.
Yeah.
Is it difficult for them to stay? Is it difficult for those top teams to stay at least in the Prem? You don't even have to be a top four to top six team. Everton has been essentially irrelevant. They've been like a mid-table Prem team forever, but they get that money every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't play against those NHL B teams because they're technically in a different league now,
mm-hmm.
it's not like they're getting that revenue source.
They are in a different league, but that's why I'm trying to eliminate that part of it as much as possible because that's going to be the holdup. And one thing that I threw in there, just kind of my own idea, was the winner of the NHL B gets entry into the Stanley Cup playoffs each year. So it is giving you something to play for to in relation to the top league, not just that you're going to be playing there next season now. And you would have to, I mean, you could do other things like the Premier League does where they have a big, big cash reward to the winner of the second club. In fact, I think this was true a couple years ago. I wonder if it still is. The Championship, which is Tier 2 of English soccer, the winner of that league is that's like the biggest cash prize for
any team in sports that year. Yeah.
So I guess you could do something like that to make it worth it.
Yeah. It's an obscene amount of money.
But like to me, I think I would be more interested in the Sabres had this format existed in the last 10 years. Because you're still bad, but you're winning. You know? And then I don't know. Maybe I've exhausted my arguments here.
There
would be kinks you'd have to work out, but
I don't see how you could convince an owner that has made this investment for a league set up the way that it is to completely radically change it. And that's why I have a hard time talking about it because it's so radical. Like, to me, it would have had to be like this is something that would have had to be done at the inception of the league in the first place.
Okay. And you don't believe that $100 million would be enough to change their minds, which is just by the numbers we just threw out there, just speculating. If you're going on what Seattle's expansion fee was and then you multiply that by 8, divide it for each owner up, I mean, you're talking about $100 million in expansion fees.
I don't think so, because I think the long-term ramifications of being bad would scare away too many owners.
I'm going to have to keep working on this. It's a campaign. The owners are who I need to be campaigning towards. It's the expansion checks. Maybe they got to get higher for that to work. And what number do they say yes? $500 million?
I have no idea.
$1 billion? Like, that's unrealistic, but I just want relegation in sports. North American sports. But you're right. Unless it was at the outset, you made the best point. If it wasn't there at the foundation, how are you going to get it in there? So, all right, 803-0550 is the phone number. We will change gears, talk NFL draft when we come back. There is a rumor from Ian Rappaport. Does that graduate to report? I think it's a report that the Dolphins might be moving out of the sixth spot, even though they just traded up to there after they made their trade a month ago. So we'll talk about what's happening at the top of the NFL draft when we come back. Jody Biasi and Brendan Keeney, this is the Nightcap on WGR.
Shefty, what are you hearing about who's going to be the third quarterback off the board?
Oh, it'll be Mac Jones.
So I would imagine if it's Mac Jones, that means that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be traded then?
No, not right now. Right now the plan would be for the 49ers. Again, if the draft were held today, they've got to go through the process and they've got to assess all the quarterbacks. I believe that in the end, they will pick Mac Jones at 3. That'll be the pick. And they will keep Jimmy Garoppolo this year. Now, look, could New England decide we're going to give you this and this on draft day or draft weekend and the Niners make a decision to trade him, yeah, that could be.
Adam Schefter, a few weeks ago on Rick DiPietro's ESPN radio show. Did you know that was a thing?
Is he still getting paid by the Islanders?
Yeah.
The Bobby Bonilla of the NHL?
Yeah, he is. How much longer is on that deal? There can't be that much more, right? Hasn't he been gone for like 10 years?
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
DiPietro's buyout goes till 2029. So he gets a check for $1.5 million for the next 8 years. And he hasn't played for them since 2013.
That is more recent than I would have thought.
2013?
Yeah.
Well, remember, he was like a... Wasn't he like a backup for them at the end? I remember...
Not well-versed on the career of Rick DiPietro.
Okay. I'm pretty sure he was like a backup at the end. Three games played in 2012-13. Eight games played the year before that. 26-8-5. He hadn't played more than 26 games since 2008. That's probably why. He had like four of those five seasons. He played less than 10 games. That makes sense. All right. Anyways, the point there... About why I played that is 2 weeks ago, April 6th, Schefter said it's Mac Jones. Like, everyone was saying it. Everyone was saying it was Mac Jones. He was the heavy betting favorite to be the third pick. Today, Justin Fields is the favorite for the third pick. Jones is actually tied with Trey Lance in the odds. And you've got Jeremy Fowler saying from ESPN, the Niners don't know who they're picking. And I think they played this perfectly. I think the Niners started the Mac Jones rumors, and I think they did it far enough in advance of the draft, 6 weeks ahead, to where they can get away with, oh, we weren't playing everybody. We had enough time to change our mind. You know, we saw Justin Fields play. Now, I'm still struggling to find a great motivation to why they would do that, other than just playing around with New England. Trying to make them think, hey, you're not getting Mac Jones. You better trade us a first for Jimmy Garoppolo. But I don't know how the Fields part of that works in here. So
I just don't see a motivation.
I just don't know.
I'm not saying there isn't one. They could just be trolling. Has anyone thought about that? They could just be trolling.
Would that be the coach in the league that would just be doing it to do it?
Could just be trolling just for the sake of trolling.
Maybe.
I mean, look what it's... To be fair, it's generated a lot of buzz about San Francisco this offseason. They've had the spotlight for the past several weeks.
A team that we really, right, if we knew on the day they made the trade that they loved Justin Fields, we would have never talked about them.
Exactly, because no one talks about the Jaguars and the Jets anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what's going on. And here's the thing, I don't want to know who the 49ers are taking.
Oh, me neither.
Until it's announced. Until Roger Goodell calls that name. On April 29th, I do not want to know. Because, what, the first 40 minutes of the draft is going to be scripted, essentially? Yeah.
Where I keep coming back to when we talk about the top of the draft, though, is the Patriots. Because day by day, I'm more worried that they're going to end up with a guy. They're going to end up with one of these top guys.
Really? Because I'm getting less and less worried by the day.
Well, my problem is I don't see a fourth team. I don't see a clear fourth team. Now, it could happen. Because it's going to go Lawrence, Wilson to the Jaguars and Jets. The Niners will take their guy at 3. And then who's the fourth quarterback?
It could be Atlanta.
It could be. But
I am...
Matt Ryan, you can't get out of that this year in any way. It is $75 million, $70.5 million of dead cap. Next year, it's 40. Trade him, release him, doesn't matter. $40 million. You draft a guy this year... And all that talk about how great it is to have a quarterback on his rookie deal, you're burning 2 years of that because Matt Ryan's not going anywhere. So if I were them, I would do it anyway because I'm not going anywhere with Matt Ryan as my quarterback. Their over-under win total this year is 7 on a 17-game schedule. They're not competing with Tampa or Green Bay or New Orleans or whoever. So what's the difference? You know, time to turn the page, especially with a new GM and new coach. I don't think they're doing that, though. I think they brought in Arthur Smith, and they brought in Terry Fontenot, and they held on to Julio Jones. They could have traded him this offseason, I guess, if they really wanted to. Like, there were no moves to signify they're starting over. And to me, My guess is that they will sit there at four. Well, maybe they'll trade down. Maybe that's the most likely outcome. They'll trade down. They'll get pieces that'll help them win right now, and they'll play out the final 2-3 years of Matt Ryan's contract, and they'll try to do the best they can. That's my guess for what they do. And if that happens, which I know, would you disagree that that's not the more likelier outcome? Would you bet on them picking a quarterback right now at four?
Ooh, that's a good question. As of right now, yes, I would.
Okay,
yes, I would. I don't think they're staying there. I think they will either choose a quarterback or trade down.
Okay.
For whatever it is, because so, why wouldn't you?
So let's say for the sake of conversation, they trade down.
Mm-hmm.
That's where New England comes in to a very clear path to getting Trey Lance. Really, Trey Lance is the guy. Not scared of Mac Jones.
I'm not, same here.
Who comes up and gets Trey Lance ahead of them?
The Broncos.
Well, here's the thing. The Broncos maybe are a good one. And this is where I want to connect it to the Rappaport rumor that I teased before the break, is New England's got to come get this guy. They got to go from 15 to somewhere to get Trey Lance if the Falcons don't do it at four. Maybe four is that pick. They got to go 11 spots. But then you've got Cincinnati at five, and it sounds like they're not moving. They're just going to sit there and pick Penei Sewell, or they're going to pick Ja'Marr Chase.
It works well for them because they're going to get a stud.
Yeah. And then there's Miami at six. Miami's not doing business with New England. They're not going to hand them their ticket
right to
their next franchise quarterback. Kind of similarly to, I think, Atlanta wouldn't move with Carolina.
You know what wouldn't surprise me is if the Broncos look at Miami as that destination to move up to prevent New England from moving up.
Sure. And I think I need Denver to be that motivated, because otherwise I'm counting on Detroit. And there's nothing about them right now circling in these rumors. It's Denver and it's Detroit. If Denver or Detroit don't move up to get Trey Lance, if the Falcons don't do it, then New England's going to get him. New England's going to move up and get him. And it could be to seven, to the Lions. It could be to eight, to the Panthers. That's why I think Denver needs to be motivated enough not just to sit there and pick him at nine if he's sitting there. They need to be motivated enough to move up and go get him, to beat out New England.
You don't think Minnesota has any...
I thought about them, but...
Because they're at 14.
I think they're more likely to pick a guy in the second round.
Oh, that would... You know what? I have a theory that you should never take a quarterback in the second round.
I love that theory.
Because if you think he's your guy, then he should be a first-round pick.
Right.
And if he's not... And if he's not your guy to be made in the first round, then just keep building a team until you find a better guy.
Right. But I think they will pick one of those guys. I think they'll go, oh, we've got a year left of Kirk Cousins' deal before we can get out of it. And then next year, he'll be 35. We'll cut him and get out of the cap hit. And we'll see what Kellen Mond can do. We'll see what Kyle Trask can do. There's another one now that's escaping me. There's like a third, second round guy.
From Stanford? Mills?
Mills is the other one. Like, I think the Vikings do that. I don't see them moving up from 14. But, you know, would that be the surprise of the draft right now? That's also not like, you know, like the Chargers are never doing that. Something you could conceivably see happening, but no one is seeing coming. Minnesota would be that.
How about the Giants?
The Giants, too. They're another team, I think, for second round quarterback. Hedging their bet, basically, against Daniel Jones.
That would be so...
Kind of like the Eagles did last year with Jalen Hurts. They're hedging against their starting quarterback. Would the Giants do that? I don't think they'd move up. That's why I think New England has a good shot at one of these guys. And they have a great shot if the Niners circle back around to Mac Jones. If the original rumors were true and the Niners take Mac Jones, show me how New England's not getting Justin Fields or Trey Lance.
They have to, right?
They get one. For sure.
It's the only one. Now that is only if... So say the Niners take Mac Jones three.
Yep.
Maybe Detroit... That makes Detroit more motivated to take a quarterback this year.
If the Niners do it?
If the Niners take Mac Jones, it might make Detroit more motivated to move up. And say they like Fields.
Yep.
But they know Fields is going to San Francisco at three. Maybe they would be a team to move up for Justin Fields.
Shouldn't they?
I think they should. Your quarterback is Jared Goff. I think you should do... You're sitting eighth right now in a draft that has five conceivable starters. right? Almost right off the bat. Like, Trey Lance might need some seasoning because he's really hasn't played football in his career.
Well, to me, I've been saying he should get on the field then.
Mac Jones, I don't think anyone is really sure of what Mac Jones is for a couple reasons, because he's not a great athlete, mm-hmm. and he played at a pretty insulated program. Like, he was pretty protected with the talent he had around him at Alabama. So I'm not really sure how NFL teams evaluate him. You know, I look at this, it's such a fascinating draft because the top two picks are pretty much set in stone. It appears now that San Francisco moved up for the sake of moving up. They didn't have a person in mind.
They knew they would fall for one of them.
They knew that they were going to get one of those guys, and that by the day, that seems more and more like that was their idea. We don't care who's at three.
But we know
we
one.
Need a guy at three.
Yep.
And it's almost in Miami almost did the same thing, just for a different position, it looks like. Moving up to six.
I'm sorry, I never got to I never got to the Rappaport report. Rappaport says that the Dolphins would consider moving down from six, and they're getting calls on that. And that's a weird one, because they moved up from 12 to six after they traded down from three.
Right.
So they clearly had some motivation that we're not high enough at 12. So we got to get to six.
I think,
and
the
now
motivation,
they're kind of doubling back on that, it seems a bit.
I think the motivation originally was we need to ensure ourselves one of the top playmakers, whether that's Kyle Pitts, Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, or Jaylen Waddle. Mm-hmm. I think that was their thought. But if there's going to be five quarterbacks going in the top 10 picks or top 11 picks, you're probably going to have whoever you want.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, because I think there's going to be a cornerback drafted in the top 10, Dallas seems like a likely landing spot for
Dallas,
Patrick Surtain
yes.
or J.C. Horn.
Yeah, definitely.
You're going to have Penei Sewell probably go two, and if he doesn't, he's not lasting too much longer. Mm-hmm. So there is a conceivable way that Miami can once again trade down and still get one of those four playmakers. So they're in a really good spot.
Good thing they traded up.
Or maybe not. Like, I don't know.
I think they probably get the same. Well, we'll see how far they would move down. The good thing is they're sitting at six and not Philly, because that would have been even a better chance than New England moves
sure.
up. Because one thing the Bills can ride on here is that the Dolphins will not hand New England their franchise quarterback.
Right.
No matter what they pay him, I would imagine. So that's one good thing to have. Cincinnati not moving out of five is a good thing to have. Really, I mean, where do we start this conversation? Atlanta holds the keys to the top of this draft.
100%. I think the draft essentially starts with Atlanta, because we know that San Francisco is not moving out. San Francisco, I imagine we're going to find out what they do beforehand. I hate that I feel that way, because I don't want to find out,
mm-hmm.
but I imagine we'll have a pretty good idea of who they're going to take before next Thursday rolls around. And then it's up to Atlanta. Do they stay put and grab a playmaker? Do they like Penei Sewell? You know, like, I don't know what they do. Do they trade down? Because right now, I think they're going to take Trey Lance. Like, if I had to write a mock, if I was tasked with writing a mock draft, and I don't know why anyone would ever write a mock draft, because no one ever was like, yeah, this is a really good mock draft. No one ever says that. It's always, you don't know what you're talking about. Why would anyone write a mock draft? But anyway, if I had to write one,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta, I would have them taking Trey Lance, and I would have the 49ers taking Justin Fields. And honestly, a week ago, I would have said probably Mac Jones.
Yep,
me too. I mean, it's draft season, man.
803-0550 is the phone number. I got a bone to pick with Patrick Marleau. We'll get to that and maybe some more draft stuff when we return. Last call in the nightcap after this on WG.
I do feel responsibility to the fans and the Sabres, you know, contingent. You know, we're in the entertainment business. It should be entertaining. I want to be entertained. So I can only imagine the fans. And that was one thing that I had in mind, was to make our games more intriguing, interesting, fun, entertaining. And with every team I've coached, this is no different. I'm not trying to coach necessarily to this situation as much as I'm just coaching the way I coach. And that fits, and that's always been my philosophy and approach to it. We all love the game, so let's play it at a level that we can enjoy it as well.
Sing to me, Don Granato. Is there anybody left not on the Granato train?
I don't know him.
Huh?
I don't know anyone who's not okay. on the Don Granato train.
I don't know how you don't hire him at this point. You remove the interim tag at the end of the year.
I agree, because what are you basing your decision off of if you don't hire him?
Right. You're basically saying there's nothing he could have done. Because he has made Rasmus Dahlin a completely different player. He has increased the opportunities for Casey Mittelstadt. That has worked. Tage Thompson looks better. All the young guys. Just go through any of the young players on this team. They look way better under Don Granato than they did under Ralph Kruger. And they're playing 500 hockey without Jack Eichel. And with Dustin Tokarski in net. Like, you know what? The record is not undeniable.
You're talking about the NHL Player of the Week, Joe.
NHL Player of the Week, Dustin Tokarski. First one the Sabres have had in 7 years.
That's astounding. That's...
Tyler Ennis.
Astounding.
John not, Scott has won the award.
Not a single person just had like three really good games
nope.
in 7 years.
Nope. John Scott had won the award since the Sabrehead. Probably from the All-Star game
yeah,
appearance.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Yeah.
Anyways, I got a bone to pick with Patrick Marleau.
Shoot.
Congrats to him. You know, great. What a record.
That's astounding.
No, I thought that would have been an unbreakable record. 1,768 games. He will have played the most games in the NHL in history when he steps on the ice tonight against the Golden Knights, breaking Gordie Howe's record. He has special gloves. You saw the picture, right?
Yeah.
They're black and gold gloves. They're like special edition CCM gloves for Marleau's game tonight to celebrate him being the most games in NHL history. There are, I guess if we want to be really nitpicky, there's three issues with these gloves, but there's definitely two. I said, did you see them? And you said how the Hurricanes logo's not on there. The Hurricanes are funny. I love their social media team. They make me want to love them. They are analytics. They are, we're going to celebrate after games. They are, we're going to have the most fun Twitter account. I hate that the Hurricanes have become the most likable team in the league because I hate them. But they tweeted a picture of Marleau, like, congrats to this Hurricanes legend. He was there. He wasn't ever there. They traded for him. They took a first-round pick to take his salary, and then he went to San Jose.
Yep.
So he probably never stepped foot in Raleigh as a member of the Hurricanes. So they're not on there. Fine, whatever. They've got three logos on here. The Sharks logo is the biggest on the thumb. Obviously, he played way more games for them. They got the Penguins logo up there. He played a little bit for the Penguins last year, if people forget. And then the Leafs, who he played three seasons with. It's the wrong Leafs logo. It's their old logo. He didn't play with that logo. So they've got the wrong Maple Leafs logo on his celebratory gloves. That's problem number one. And the Sundin Leafs logo, the Kessel Leafs logo. That's the one that's on there, not the current one. And then on the left glove, on the front, it says most games played in NHL history, 1,768th NHL games.
It says 68th NHL games?
68th NHL games. There's a grammar issue on the gloves. Hopefully they get that corrected. I don't know if you could do that. They could just take the threading out or something.
Just draw over it with Sharpie.
That's what they should do. I mean, what are you doing? Who made these gloves? You can't have the old Leafs logo.
Games.
All you got to do is Google the time span the Leafs use certain logos, and then Marleau's career. It takes 2 minutes. And then the other one, you're just, come on.
I saw someone on Twitter. I won't mention the name, but he is like one of those hockey guys that everyone loves to hate. And I'll just leave it at that. And he...
There's a couple of those, but okay, yeah.
He was like poo-pooing this accomplishment by Patrick Marleau. He was like, just so you know, Patrick Marleau has never finished higher than ninth in Hart Trophy voting. He's like, who cares, man?
I can't wait to see what he's got when Ovechkin breaks the Gretzky goal record, too. It's going to be something like that.
Oh, my gosh. It's just like, you can't just enjoy an incredible accomplishment by a human who obviously put all he had into his craft. You can't just enjoy that. You have to pick something apart. It's astounding. The guy's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, whether he finished above ninth or not.
Yeah, it's
he
not...
was drafted when I was like two.
Right. And it's not like he was... You know, this isn't a Dominic Moore. This isn't some third, fourth line
right.
grinder. He was a star player for a long time. Like, he was never the best player in hockey. But
who is?
He was an all-star player for over a decade. Like, he was
Like, I just don't. I don't get why.
Yeah, it's a weird. That was a terrible job. The
he has 1,196 points, 566 goals, 630 assists. And your first comment is, "Well, you never finished over ninth in Hart voting." Like, come on, man.
Terrible. The next big record to be broken, I think, will be the Ovechkin goal record. I think Ovechkin will break Gretzky's record for the most goals in NHL history. He is on fire lately. He has 17 goals in his last 22 games, and he will need them because I'm starting to think about it more and more. He needs 5 to 6 more years at a 30-goal pace. And right now, he's on a 48-game pace over 82 because 24 goals in 42 games, just under 47 goals. So he keeps playing like this, he'll get there before he turns 40. But I think Ovechkin will get it. I've talked about this a lot before. The math adds up. The motivation he has talked about, he will stick around for that record if he needs to. There's no decline in his game. Like, to me, he could be 44 and just stand in one place on the power play and score 20 goals. So, Marlow, congrats, breaks the record for most games played tonight from Gordie Howe. I think the next big one will be Ovechkin's goal record. And if we project out on his current pace, maybe a little bit of a decline, we're probably talking about another 4 or 5 years before he does that. Nothing else is in the window for anybody else.
Another one on the horizon. If Jaromir Jagr plays 9 more seasons at 100 points per, he has a shot at breaking Gretzky's record.
That's amazing. Gretzky's records are just stupid sometimes. Like, they're not even. That's why Ovechkin's is so crazy, because none of his records are ever touchable. But OV, I think, is going to get there. All right, that's it for me and Brendan on the nightcap tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening. 6:30 puck drop, a rare one between the Sabres and Bruins tomorrow night. So we'll rejoin you on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Until then, have a good night. This has been the Nightcap on WGR.